Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, WAG listeners, it's Allison, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Candleland supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Candleland shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes from some of our podcasts.
We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Candleland supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. For $2 a month, you can become a supporter and do your part to ensure we can continue making this show. And we really like making this show for you.
Basically nothing costs $2 anymore. You could like get a bag of candy, a locker at a public swimming pool. I've been honestly trying to think of something that cheap and I'm not getting far.
So sign up for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
We are just rounding out the second week of the Ontario election campaign.
We are. It's that fun period in any given campaign where the parties are just like frantically Googling each other's candidates and people who are probably either highly overpaid or deeply underpaid methodically go through every Facebook comment a given partisan has ever left, their eyes glazing over at the in-jokes and inanity until they find that one treasured single offending word that will leave a gap on the ballot.
Also this week, we had the first leaders debate, the Ontario Liberals released their fully costed platform, and Doug Ford spoke to the media for the fewest number of minutes that he possibly could.
That sounds about right.
I'm Allison Smith, publisher of Queen's Park Today, and this is the day I finally say the words slap my nuts on a podcast.
I'm Jonathan Goldsby, news editor at Candleland, and I suspect you could give me the name of any given candidate in this election who's never previously run for public office before, and by the time we're done this recording, I could find you something that would be, if not potentially disqualifying, then at least something they might have to issue a statement about.
And this is Wag the Dog,
a weekly podcast about the Ontario election.
So first up, the leaders of Queen's Park's four main political parties were in North Bay on Tuesday afternoon for the first leaders' debate. It was hosted by the Federation of Northern Ontario Municipalities and sort of generally focused on northern issues. What do you think of the debate?
I was distracted a bit by the fact that tickets to attend in person cost $125, which is unusual for a debate, and also just an odd amount of money. It's $20 more than second row seats to catch Colin Fiore as Richard III in Stratford that afternoon would have been. It took place at the Capital Center in North Bay, whose programming for the remainder of the week includes a screening of Superbad, performances by Pappy and the Cappies and Pet Rat, and two showings of the Paw Patrol movie in both English and French, Paw Patrouille. But to the debate itself, it was the sort of debate performance that leaders offer when they want to make a point of showing up to and shouting out a particular constituency while remaining secure in the knowledge that few outside of that constituency, other than professional political watchers, will actually take in the thing live. I mean, it was an election debate at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday.
Well, and as Doug Ford would have you know, all those other leaders are the ones that are just making policies for the downtown Toronto bubble, but not him. Doug Ford of Etobicoke North, former Toronto City Councillor, he's the one who cares the most about Northern Ontario and really gets it.
Is there any indication he had ever set foot in Northern Ontario prior to seeking the PC leadership or even while seeking the PC leadership?
Well, he has a cottage.
Is that northern? Where does northern? Like northern Ontario.
Well, I mean, North Bay isn't too far north from like Muskoka. I don't know exactly where his cottage is, but it's give or take same region. So we got a Donald Trump moment. Doug Ford decided to evoke the former president of the United States on the stage, which I think might have been one of the few things he said that wasn't written in his direct notes, unless it maybe was.
We were able to stand up the PPE. We were able to get 3M. I went after President Trump like no one ever went after him because he cut us off with 3M.
It's an odd statement in any way you look at it, but certainly the entirely needless and obviously bullshit exaggeration is such a Trump thing to do, which is not to say Ford is like Trump, but I mean, what you have to think of, what kind of person feels the need to not just say, I did this thing, but I did it any better than anyone who has ever lived, especially when that is manifestly, transparently false. What kind of person? I mean, the answer, I guess, is a narcissist.
Yeah, I think all those prosecutors in New York State trying to put Trump in jail for fraud, they're probably giving it to him a little bit harder than Ford did on the N95s.
And two months before he said he went after President Trump like no one ever went after him. He was fucking advocating for Trump's re-election. So
that is true. He did do that.
So when what he was referring to in going after Trump, because we should probably clarify that, he was talking about in April 2020 when Trump blocked PPE exports to Canada. And then Ford acted, you know, was all like offended and huffy as though, you know, he was like so totally surprised when this America First president he enthusiastically supported didn't see himself as part of some sort of community of nations.
Yeah, and that was sort of his response when the other three leaders started going after him about his government's COVID response. Because when he first got that question, he tried to brush it off, started talking about like Ontario unity and how well the province pulled together and blaming the Liberals for the PPE stockpile being expired, which in fairness is totally their fault. It kind of seemed like the only topic that threw Ford off a little bit, like where the other leaders got an edge on him.
Children in this province had the longest amount of time out of school of anyone in North America.
I want Doug Ford to respond, and then we'll go to Stephen Del Duca
to support our kids.
We'll come to you.
I'm a little shocked and disappointed what I heard from my two colleagues. Well, we were in a full-out battle.
But I think, you know, it remains to be seen whether the pandemic is going to become much of an issue in this campaign, because I think, as we've talked about before in the show, like people don't want to hear about it. My overall picture of the debate for Ford is that the PC campaign would have been really happy about it. Like he didn't, other than the Trump remark and the COVID part, like he didn't get thrown off balance. He also didn't get like too angry and attack anyone in a way that would like look unseemly, I think.
Like putting his hand around their neck, you mean?
Well, like when he told Kathleen Wynne to smile or whatever the last campaign, like there was none of that. But like he was still kind of aggressive and assertive, okay, and so like talked over Stephen Del Duca. He definitely wasn't like pussyfooting around. And like we mentioned kind of in the last show, like he's so far ahead in the polls. All he really needs to do for the next 3 weeks is like not majorly fuck up. And he didn't on that day.
Yeah, I mean, for Doug Ford to speak or to be on a stage for an hour and a half and not majorly fuck up is an achievement for him. Like, that is not something we generally associate with him. So congratulations for being able to stand in one place and offer a string of words that occasionally form sentences, which even then occasionally form ideas. And none of those ideas, as it turns out, are lobbying a misogynist insult. So that is a new high bar for Doug Ford. Good for him. He should win re-election.
Get it done. I mean, by the end, I'm not one who really wants to like rail against politicians for using teleprompters or reading notes, because they all like lots of them kind of do it and it's lame, but whatever. But like Ford was really staring at his notes by the end of this thing. Like he was reading, it seemed like he was reading every line he said out loud, including like the line, "We're going to get it done," which you should at least know that one.
did he like get out one or two of the words and then pause and try to figure out the word? We're going to get it done.
Well, and apparently at the debate that's coming up next week, kind of the probably going to be the more exciting of the debates, which is being hosted by TVO, he is apparently going to bring a binder full of the phrase "get it done" to that debate, even though the broadcast consortium is like not obviously encouraging that.
Oh, I'm imagining sort of like a Shining situation where you just open the pages in the binder, just page after page filled with the words to get it done. Get it done, get it done, get it done.
It's beautiful. One thing I wanted to point out, Andrea Horvath's performance in the campaign, I wonder what you think of this. Like she, I counted five times that she said a phrase, like some variation of the phrase, Premier Ford only works for his buddies.
The gentleman beside me, Mr. Ford, he spends a lot of time prioritizing his buddies, and it's the rest of us that end up paying the price for that.
But she never provided like any example of that. What do you think of her just saying those words out loud? Like, does that seep into anyone's consciousness, or should she be actually hammering him on like, he gave vaccine contracts to private companies who donated to the PC party, and he, you know, got long-term care homes with Mike Harris on the board out of COVID liabilities.
Yeah, no, without this, there were no specifics about the 413 or anything.
No,
Jesus.
No.
Okay, well, I mean, Andrea Horvath is also not known for her skills in campaigning, nor is the NDP known for their skills with messaging. Vague allegations of cronyism don't seem to get the same traction unless you build up like certain characters. Not that that's necessary, but you know, obviously you think of the way Doug Ford has done that in the past and still kind of continues
right,
to do
yeah,
that.
Right, yeah, $1 million man, like then that's the
yeah.
bad thing we should worry about, whereas just general buddies is...
yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know how I feel it on like a philosophical or even ideological level, if it's a step forward for, if it makes politics better, but it does seem to be more effective if you're going to go this route to, yeah, actually keep hammering on one specific example of alleged corruption and just keep hammering on that again and again and again.
And actually you see that, I know this is like not our beat necessarily, but Pierre Poilievre in the Conservative Party of Canada leadership debate last night just started saying that he's going to fire Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem, which to me felt like a very Ford, like throwback
yeah.
to Ford's $6 million man. Like that worked and, you know, got Ford elected. Like, and it seems like Poilievre is taking a page from that playbook.
Yeah. So if you didn't see the debate, you didn't miss a whole lot. And no, they, for this debate on northern issues, they didn't offer any solutions for tackling the policing crisis or any of the other crises in Thunder Bay. It was the kind of debate where there was about 10 minutes on addiction and a solid 45 minutes on building and repairing roads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So also on Monday, the Liberals released their campaign platform. It's called A Place to Grow, which is, you know, that hearkening back to that song from the late 60s, early 70s that the Kathleen Wynne Liberals trotted back out, re-recorded. It was actually kind of nice. It was weird.
A Place to Grow also, before we get into the meat of this, was also the slogan on the PC's blue-on-blue license plates that were that huge boondoggle for Ford because nobody can read them. That's
what
it
that.
Said on them.
I forgot because it could, you know, not readable, so.
Right. So kind of interesting that government, the province service, Ontario is reissuing the white plates that still say yours to discover. So eventually at some point the blue ones will go away. But I do think it's interesting that Del Duca chose that
yes.
kind of PC, pretty PC associated phrase in my
is
opinion.
Is it? I don't know. I mean, it's like the, yeah, I guess so. I guess the PCs were in government in the 60s. So the actual platform, what jumped out at you from this 82 page glossy document with stock photography?
I mean, I think the top level things that are maybe worth knowing are that the Liberals are going to spend generally more money than the PCs will, but still promising to balance the budget the same year as them. The way they're going to do that is by projecting higher corporate tax revenues and by asking Justin Trudeau very nicely to reopen the childcare deal and give the province another $5 billion. I don't know if that will work. They're going to bring back the basic income pilot, hire more healthcare workers, raise ODSP by 20%, scrap a bill that limits salary hikes for public sector workers, and create a new housing authority that would see the government build various types of affordable housing.
Yeah, last week we were like talking about how the Liberals seeming to be having fun and making, you know, a little bolder in their promises, maybe partly because they know the small likelihood of having to fulfill them, but at least they were taking the opportunity of being in third place to just toss stuff out there that could get people dreaming. This platform is not that, and very much like, oh yeah, this is, yeah, they're the Liberals, and we will make things better marginally so. Incrementalism. So you see things and like, yeah, everything they suggest, that sounds definitely better than what we have now. But, you know, then you look at the NDP platform and it says in the same thing. It's like, oh, yeah, that would be substantially better. Still may not actually happen, but yeah, that would be better. So like rent controls, for example, the Liberals are proposing that they're so basically buildings first occupied in some part of 2018 onward, rent controls don't apply to those. So theoretically, there's no cap on how much of the rent can be raised on, I guess, on an annual basis or whatever. Whereas for buildings built before that date or buildings first occupied for residential purposes before that date, the rent can't be raised on an annual basis more than the annual provincial guideline, which is usually between like 0.5% and slightly over 2%. So they would get rid of the 2018 date so that all buildings are subjected to that. Okay, that's good. But like, you know, go to the NDP platform and would not only would they not have sort of a cutoff on rent controls, they would also basically, there would be rent controls from between tenancies. You basically, a landlord has to charge for a unit the same thing that they charged the previous tenant. That would be extraordinary in terms of actually controlling rental prices in Ontario. Would it ever happen? I don't know. I hope so. That would be a bold, massive change. And beyond that, it would pretty much completely remove the incentive for rent evictions and other sorts of landlord's own use, quasi-evictions, and other ways that landlords, you know, try to boot out tenants so they can find new tenants who pay or pay more. Like, that's something that would make a difference. And I mean, I feel like that kind of the difference between the Liberals proposing and what the NDP is proposing kind of characterizes the difference between the parties generally, but certainly between their platforms.
Right. Well, especially because the PCs at the time that they changed the rent control rules were going to get rid of rent control for everyone or at least a longer period of time. And then they kind of got talked into pushing it back to just 2018.
Because it was originally, I think it was 1996 that was sort of the previous threshold, where basically if you had the misfortune of living in a building that has been built or first occupied for residential purposes after that date in the mid-90s, then rent controls did not apply to you and your rent can go up pretty much any amount over the course.
And then the Liberals changed it and then the PCs were going to pull it back and then public pressure made them just pick 2018.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm just saying is, yeah, Stephen Del Duca is just kind of like, even the PCs it was a half measure for them. So pulling back a half measure is not that big of a measure, according to my ruler.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of interested in the fact that, like, I mean, that there's still almost this, like, tradition of parties, you know, wanting to look serious by making a costed platform. Like, is there any point to this? Because I think statistically zero people in Ontario read this or noticed this or care. You know, it just seems like a way for opposition leaders to like make themselves seem serious, even though they're kind of really just opening themselves up to criticism. And a lot of times on like their financial plans, which are, you know, just as illusionary as like, honestly, most of a budget is as soon as it starts forecasting, you know, 4 or 5 years into the future. The NDP released their platform before the PC's budget. So that was probably like 2.5, 3 weeks ago now. And now Horvath is being pressured because she said that they would have a costed one after the budget. They haven't yet put that out. But I think as soon as they do, they're just going to be opening themselves up to people being like, well, those big spending NDPs are going to not balance the budget. Like, that's going to be the story they did to do it. So like, why set yourself up for this when honestly you could do like the PCs did in 2018 and just stamp some shit on a website that you plan to do and never tell anyone how much it'll cost. Like, that honestly seems like better political strategy at this point.
I don't know. Yeah, this is the question between strategy and does opting for a particular strategy result in a gradual erosion of standards or norms or expectations that were actually meaningful in the first place. It's really hard to say. I have to be honest when talking about, you know, deficits and balancing the budgets, when you're talking in such abstract terms as a costed platform, when you're looking, like, I find it really hard to care.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Really, like, it's hard to care. And I love details and numbers and things, but I find it really hard to care.
It's like, you know, if someone makes a business plan, they end up with a graph in it that, like, goes up because they're going to project that their business is going to grow. That doesn't actually mean anything because nothing's happened yet. So I feel like it's just an exercise in that. I do want to point to one other thing that Stephen Del Duca said the day that he released the platform and his kind of closing remarks. Mm-hmm. I'll read you this quote. "You can't just wake up and wave a magic wand and hope that you get whatever you're looking for. There's only one way to achieve. Work hard, take nothing for granted, earn whatever you want to earn at every step of the way." And he called this the Ontario way.
Capitalism?
Yeah, earn whatever you want to earn every step of the way. That just seems like a very kind of, I mean, Doug Ford would say that he basically said that today. But I don't know, from a party that's trying to be more progressive, like, that's kind of like the same shit that Kim Kardashian said a couple weeks ago and got in big trouble for. Like, everyone get a fucking job is what she said, which I guess is worse. But
I mean, more progressives and more is in relative to the conservatives. But I mean, this is like the ultimate centrist things, like, capitalism will save us from the problems caused by capitalism. So does Stephen Del Duca think that Ontario invented capitalism and labor? And anyway,
I guess it's just like, I mean, from a guy who's also proposing a basic income pilot and like a basket affordability measures, to also just be like, earn whatever you want to earn, bitch. Okay, Jonathan, you brought this up off the top. It's kind of the silly season when the opposition research starts either coming out via the opposition or perhaps via certain media outlets. What kind of candidate gaffes, snafus, bad news stories sparked your interest this week?
So in the Toronto Sun, Warren Kinsella had a column about a high school student named Aiden, because I assume that's what high school students are named these days, who somehow managed to be acclaimed as the Liberal candidate in Sault Ste. Marie over the lawyer Naomi Sayers, who apparently was rejected from being a candidate because she gave them too much material to vet in a short period of time. And so they went with this high school student who had an Instagram account with the handle SlapMyNutsMC, although the Sun weirdly won't print the word nuts, which is very confusing because I feel like that must have been on the cover, unless there's some other word, but it's SlapMyNuts, right? Like, it's slap, the right is SlapMyN, then a bunch of spaces, and then MC. But I'm pretty sure it's SlapMyNuts, right? I was worried it was a much worse word.
I think it was nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. And as Kinsella wrote, you know, so he had referred to himself in online chats as SlapMyNutsMC and had participated in discussions where participants joked about people dying of AIDS. The Sun has not verified whether this Aiden person was one of the participants joking, which is like, what? Like I guess this is, so as we were talking about, like, there's a lot of ways these stories come about. Candidates are obviously always constantly researching each other. But goodness knows, journalists also research candidates, and tips come into journalists from people who are not associated with parties. This, however, is a case where it's like, what is he talking about? It sounds like Warren Kinsella himself is not even clear what's going on. Like, so anyway.
Yeah, it was weird. So he got turfed. And that is actually, so he's the first out of three candidates in 3 days now that have Liberal candidates that have all been thrown by the wayside. And as we're recording this on Thursday at 11:30, we are 2.5 hours out from the Elections Ontario's deadline for naming candidates. That's at 2 p.m. today. 2 p.m., okay. So they have a very little time. And apparently Del Duca was claiming this morning they're going to have a full slate. So I'm expecting just a bunch of volunteers, or a bunch, three volunteers from Toronto are just going to be named the candidates in Sault Ste. Marie or whatever. Like, there's that's kind of the only way they can do it at this point. Or who knows who, how many other high school students they can round up.
Yeah, so then there was that Stanley Barry guy, or maybe Barry Stanley. I don't know. It's all the same. The rebreathing. The rebreather.
That was weird. That one gives me such bad vibes. Oh, stop rebreathing near me. Yeah, so he was the Liberals Parry Sound Muskoka candidate, and the Star revealed on Wednesday that he published a book in 2009.
Self-published a book
that suggested homosexuality may be caused by infants rebreathing their own air after birth. He has a lot of other rebreathing theories. Apparently, this rebreathing causes a lot of trouble. Yeah, to his credit, he basically, he did admit nobody else thinks this, this theory. I completely made this up.
Yeah, that was the, well, I mean that was the best part of the interview, is he was so, without walking anything back, he was also candid about it being baseless, which is, you don't tend to find from people who have pet medical theories, who are very, very firm about, like, no, this is backed up by shit. He told the Star, it's controversial. I'm the only person who's ever said that. I'm proud of it. Stanley said he has degrees in economics from the University of Waterloo and teaching from Lakehead University, but acknowledged he has no proof to back his theory and no scientific training. Quote, none whatsoever. It's just a theoretical book, sort of folk theory, which it's untested, unproven. These are just theories I hoped others could go with. Perhaps do more testing and enlighten, But there's no proof to anything I have there.
I guess I just don't understand the mechanics of rebreathing. What does breathing your own air mean? What?
I wonder if he's an anti-masker.
That's rebreathing.
Oh shit! Why didn't we thought to ask that? Well, I guess it's too late now.
We're all rebreathing, really. When you think about it.
But he was talking about like rebreathing as some sort of thing that affects infants throughout their. I don't know. Why are we spending so much time thinking about this? There are videos on his YouTube you can watch, and he looks and sounds much like you expect a person who's very earnest about his as he puts it, folk theories. As opposed to Doug Ford, who's very intense in his dissertation on folks theory and puts that into practice every day.
The other guy who got dropped was the candidate for Chatham-Kent Leamington. That just happened earlier.
That was
this morning. Yeah, he used a homophobic slur in a bunch of messages. So he was just gone as quick as we ever heard his name. I wanted to bring up another one. I don't know if you would have read about this, Jonathan, but it's a good example of what you were getting at, that we don't always know how journalists find out about such things. So Brian Lilly had a column over last weekend, I believe. He was attacking an NDP candidate for Thunder Bay Superior North, Lisa Vaugeois, because she reportedly questioned the value of the national anthem, O Canada, on a podcast in 2009. The podcast was called Pedagogy Non Grata, pedagogical podcast. And Lily is out with all these quotes of things she said on this podcast. And of course, it's kind of written as if he uncovered such things.
Oh, I want to pull this up.
Yeah.
Lily Pedagogic. Brian Lilly Pedagogy is such a weird thing to type into Google. NDP to file complaint over Lily's misleading attack on NDP. What's this? I missed that.
Yeah, so I guess the NDP asked for a retraction of this story and then has filed a complaint with the National News Media Council because they wouldn't retract it because, according to them, she actually said a lot of nice things about O Canada on this podcast. It's really here nor there. I don't care if anyone likes O Canada, to be honest.
Oh, it was a 2019 podcast. Okay. You said 2009. I was like, that's someone's
like Brian
digging.
Lilly did not just come about this podcast content, I would hazard.
Really? He's not spending all day listening to Pedagogy Non Grata, which discusses the latest, most pertinent issues in education from an evidence-based perspective? No, of course he is. The most recent episode, interview with Dr. Garforth on how to switch from balanced literacy to structured literacy. If Brian Lilly's not listening to this, who is?
I mean, I guess we'd be remiss right now. We do have to say the other things that have come out are against the PC candidates, that a bunch of candidates have been taking, or candidates, incumbent MPPs like Lisa McLeod and Greg Rickford and a few others have been receiving salary top-ups from their riding associations over the past 4 years, like to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars that they are, I guess, getting on top of their salaries.
If you just, you know, think about the shit that Rob and Doug Ford were on about at City Hall every fucking day about so-called slush funds and counselor expenses and perks and passes to just and the fact that his because this is not just all like party money, right? This is money from donors and that's subsidized from the government, right? And you know, in his statements this, or it is a, you know, a press conference this morning, he was like, "Oh, I'm disappointed. We'll give him a, basically, I'll give him a talking to, and the day after the election, we'll all sit down with all the parties and figure out blah blah blah." Yeah, no, it's this sort of. It's basically he and his brother built their political careers on shit like this. It's pretty clear that had any other party done this, he would be calling it a slush fund. It is massively hypocritical, but not the least bit surprising. And now it's time for the 413, our segment looking at things that are needless, not terribly meaningful, probably have no reason to exist or be talked about, but there's enough where there's enough weirdness going on under the surface that we should, you know, take a look and consider them anyway. In other words, election ephemera, which we will rate on a scale from 1 to 413, 1 being the lowest, 413 being the most 413.
Okay, first up, we have a parody of Doug Ford's theme song. It is from a YouTube account called Catholic Teachers. And since we're such Doug Ford theme song heads, we did have to weigh this one. It turns a few things around on the PCs and makes fun of their song, I guess. There's footage of Doug Ford and his little shovel. I mean, I liked that.
I like the musical arrangement a lot. At the beginning, it almost sounds like Lords Royal taking the get it. Let me play it.
Working hard every day, we make more cuts and make others pay. Nobody said it was an easy road. I'll hide my cuts, but you'll still feel the toll. We got big, big dreams, folks. You gotta believe.
I like the musical arrangement there. I think it's a clever creative twist on a song that sounds like the most generic radio rock imaginable. But yes, the problem with this song, this Catholic Teachers version, is that it's horrible.
Yeah, it's pretty cringe.
The lyrics get to a point where, well, let's just play you this.
Always fighting for cuts, 50,000 children without autism support. We gotta buy your vote. License plate stickers refund. We threw you a bone.
Yeah, I rate it 10.
Oh goodness, no! I'm because I give it a lot of points for the creativity of the arrangement. I'll give it an 87 out of 413.
Okay, the other one, I mean, it's kind of hard to call this one election ephemera necessarily because it is actually a pretty big deal.
Maybe we should just slot this back, yeah.
Well, whatever. We're going to talk about it here nonetheless. Stephen Lecce has been caught by Press Progress as being involved in perhaps hosting a slave auction at his university frat at Western. Doug Ford said he was not going to drop him as a candidate, and Lecce is very sorry, and, you know, he was a teenager. Although we figured out that he actually turned 24 days before?
Yeah, about that.
The slave auction?
Yeah, it was just on the cusp of his 20th birthday. And we should clarify, it's people auctioning each other for like personal servitude / assistance / butler service for a day.
Press Progress does a really good job though of tying it to like the literal history of slavery in elite U.S. universities that have the exact same frat, Sigma Phi, I don't know. I don't.
Sigma Chi.
Sigma Chi. I don't want to ever know the names of frats, so I let them slip out of my mind as soon as I hear them. But this is actually literally rooted in racism about the slave trade that goes back hundreds of years. So it's not, you know, obviously it was probably in the Western case a little bit of a goofy stunt, but it's not. It's bad. But also Justin Trudeau did blackface, so I don't know what our standards are. Apparently, you can still be prime minister, and I guess you can still be education minister.
I feel like they're distinctly racist and problematic for similar but different enough reasons that it's almost weird to me to see how equally they're being weighed as though they're equal type things. But it did also remind me that the Ontario Ombudsman was taken, or the Ombudsman's office was taken to the Human Rights Tribunal not quite a decade ago, almost a decade ago, over, it wasn't a slave auction, but it was a silent auction at which Slave for a Day was one of the proposed possible prizes.
So from 1 to 4, 13, I'm going to rank how bad of a thing this is to do and put it at about 380.
Yeah, I mean, on a scale of 1 to 413, I would probably put it around, I'd almost put it almost straight exactly at 350. This is quite bad. Not as jarring as you first see the headline in the photo, like, holy shit, but it's still like, oh, shit. Who would have guessed that a frat at Western in the mid-2000s would have engaged in some highly problematic, offensive, and racist behavior? If anything, it's kind of impressive and surprising that that hadn't come out previously. Another thing this week is the profile of Stephen Del Duca in Toronto Life by Jason McBride. Allison, will you read some choice physical descriptions of the Liberal leader?
With his clean-shaven head, thin lips, and stocky frame, there's a somewhat cartoonish aspect to Del Duca's physical presence.
Comparisons to Daddy Warbucks or Muppet scientist Dr. Bunsen Honeydew are common, unkind, and unfortunately accurate.
Did you ever tweet about him looking like Bunsen Honeydew? Because you've been saying this for months.
Have I? I feel like, I mean, Colin Robinson is always my sort of go-to. Okay, I'm going to search my own Twitter history for Honeydew. I feel like I wouldn't have actually said, I've never tweeted the word Honeydew.
Okay, yeah, but I may have said Muppet. Whether this journalist who wrote this honestly withering description of Del Duca in Toronto Life in a new profile that just came out had grabbed that from you.
I mean, you know, I may have said it on the podcast,
Yeah.
I don't think I may have, but also it's a very...
It's obvious. It's obvious. Yeah.
For a long time, I had trouble putting my finger on which Muppet he most looked like. Bunsen Honeydew, I guess. I don't know. It still doesn't seem quite right. I feel like he is his own Muppet.
I mean, the part of the description that really gets me is thin lips. Like, that's such a specific and mean insult. Like, I feel like that would give me, and I'm like not self-conscious about my lips in any way, shape or form, but if someone put it in a profile that I had thin lips, like, I think I would get a complex. It just feels so specific that it would make you feel very bad.
I could go down this rabbit hole. I do have things to say, but in terms of trying to pick apart his physical appearance any further.
Thin-lipped bastard. I'm going to rank it honestly pretty high, this description, because I think it was bold to write this in the magazine. And honestly, as he said, accurate. I'm going to go 382.
On a scale of 1 to 413, I would have to say about 367. Very nice writing. Way to go, Jason McBride.
And there's a funny other part of the profile where he's trying to get Del Duca to his team to let him like do something with Del Duca. He's like, maybe we can play baseball. Maybe we can play golfing. Like, maybe we can, you know, let's get out there and see him in his element. Like, what does he like to do? And the one thing that his campaign team will and Del Duca will agree to is going grocery shopping at 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning. That's him in his element.
And that was Wag the Dog, a show about clean-shaven heads, thin lips, can't lose.
We are going to keep releasing weekly episodes throughout the rest of the Ontario election campaign. Come back next Friday for the biggest, weirdest, and most interesting things to happen on the hustings.
I'm Jonathan Goldsby. You can find me on Twitter at Goldsby.
I'm Allison Smith. You can find me on Twitter at Queen's Park Today.
Our producer is Kevin Sexton. Our managing editor is Kieran Outsorn. And our theme music is by Nathan Burley.
Our podcast is listener-supported. Right now, Canada Land is offering a special time-limited offer. $3 for 3 months of premium feeds for all our shows. Just go to canadaland.com/join.
Hey, WAG listeners, it's Allison, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Candyland supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Candyland shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes from some of our podcasts.
We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Candyland supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. For $2 a month, you can become a supporter and do your part to ensure we can continue making this show. And we really like making this show for you.
Basically nothing costs $2 anymore. You could like get a bag of candy, a locker at a public swimming pool. I've been honestly trying to think of something that cheap and I'm not getting far.
So sign up for just $2 a month. For the next 6 months, just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.